little much.
Well, I'm sort of looking at the clock and thinking we have talked a long time, and
good
I'm
grief.
Afraid I might be exhausting you. Although,
no, but
you're
really,
not.
When am I ever allowed, as Frank's children said, you mean they asked him to talk? Nobody's ever asked me to talk. But I think I've. Is that on?
It's on.
Oh. Well, it's of course it's such a pleasure to be asked to talk about all of this. Though I must, it's very emotional. Recover a little bit, because really, Jim would have been the one.
I know.
But anyway.
It's okay. It's okay.
As I said a while ago, as I said it to you, I thought, yeah, he never thought he did enough. But I think W&L people do feel that way. But I can give you all this silliness and foolishness and the fun part, but he would have been such a, I'm sure others have told you this, he would have been such a resource. He'd give you far more meat than I can. But life is not always fair.
Well, that's why I think it's so important to talk to all of you who are with us and get you while you're here.
Well, imagine how lucky I am to have our son there. And Jim did live to see that and to be so proud of him. Because he felt he was doing it right, and he felt that it was of value to the university to have this sense of continuity, not because he thought his record was so great that it should go on. He didn't feel that at all. But he just felt that this sense of tradition, that everything doesn't change. Mm-hmm. And that at a time when so much had changed, maybe it was good. He would never have been so arrogant as to say, oh, they got to put my son in there. But he just felt, I think, that that was a sense of, well, there's still some of the sameness. And I hope that will be the case. I hope others will feel that Jimmy, and certainly Kitty, who at a time when a lot of young wives maybe resent the demands that are made on by their husband's position. She, if ever there was a team, she works every bit as hard as he does and loves it. She's that kind of person who enjoys the wives who come back with the alumni board, and of course the husbands now who come, because they're increasingly, they're women, particularly in the law school. And she makes such a huge contribution. And doesn't even, I mean, there are times where I've heard her say, oh, I'm so tired of this or that. But she, it's her life, and she loves it and loves Washington and Lee, and they work, seem to work it out pretty well together. So, what is it, nothing ever really changes, I guess, sometimes. On the other hand, my father-in-law used to, I'd get so tired of hearing him say, well, there's nothing so permanent as change. So I guess it all depends. I would think, oh, she wouldn't say that. Well, at this age, I know all too well that that's true. But it has certainly been an incredible experience for me, living here on Lookout Mountain, having only lived in Lynchburg and Lexington, and to come here and suddenly realize I'm surrounded by Washington and Lee. And it's just, it has meant so much to me, and it's made the adjustment so much easier that I have an identity here, just as Frank does. It, you know, it's not quite the same, but hardly. But I'm not just dependent on him to make friends. Because I went to camp, for one thing, over at Camp Allegheny, right outside of Whitesulfa. And so many girls here went to Allegheny, and we were friends when we were 14 and 15. It just happened. That's just sheer dumb luck. But the Washington and Lee tie is tremendous. And that's just, by the way, there's one Dr. Gaines story. Do we have time?
Oh,
I must
please.
Tell you.
Please.
This was before Jim and I were married. It's before Jim and I were married. The summer after he graduated. And there was a boy named Mitch Lewis who was a Sigma Chi. And he had been dating Mrs. Gaines' niece. And she spent a great deal of her time with Dr. and Ms. Gaines. And she'd gone to Randolph Macon and was in my class. Her name was Marie Roberts, and I was Ann Scott, so we'd stood in line R and S together, or sat alphabetically in classes together. So we were friends. And Jim, Mitch had asked Jim to be in his wedding. He'd been married in the Episcopal Church in Lexington. And Marie's mother and father were from Houston, I think, in Texas somewhere, I think. Anyway, the wedding was to be there. So, and it was my first sort of first, I guess, exposure to Lexington in the summertime, with one other exception I'll come back to, because things were dead and you know, no students around. Well, the party the night before was out at Pen Robin, which was the Gaines farm, and they had this beautiful party with Japanese lanterns hanging all in the trees and everything, and then the wedding. Oh, and when I first arrived, I was told that I was to stay with the Mrs. Gadstons. Well, the Gadston house is now the Besanson house. You know, right on the corner there, you know, the post office, and then the Episcopal Rectory, and then what is the Tutwiler house now. It used to be the Barclay house. And it's the heart of town, you know, the big houses, right, the three houses that are right beyond the post office.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Gadstons were these maiden ladies with Charleston background who lived in their father or something had been, I forget, they'd been forever in Lee's time, they were all family friends, and they were the only two left in the family, the Gadsons. And I would remember going upstairs to their room, that big old house, nothing had been changed in 100 years, and it was much like Charleston, which was their family background. I remember being intrigued that the rush matting, the floor, which was served as the carpet in this guest room, was literally, I still can remember that it was stuck to the floor. It didn't move. It had been there for so many years. Well, anyway, that's not what I wanted to tell you. I was staying, my roommate there was the fiance of Eddie Gaines, Dr. Gaines' youngest son, Anne Roswell Johns from Richmond. So she and I are all dressed up in our evening dresses, and off we go down the street to the Episcopal Church, the wedding. And once we arrived, I realized, you know, Jim was a groomsman, and Eddie, her fiance, was a groomsman, his cousin being married. I realized that we were very important guests because of that. We were ushered to a prominent position in the church, and so we're sitting there in the pew watching the wedding take place. And as the wedding party left the church, the bride and the groom left, and the bridesmaids and the groomsmen, and then Dr. Gaines, who came with Mrs. Gaines on his arm, the aunt and uncle of the bride, and when he got to our pew, because his future daughter-in-law was sitting there, he stopped dead. He had on white tie and tails and white gloves. And there we were, these two little girls. And he stopped dead in his tracks and bowed from the waist and kissed her hand. Then proceeded out of the church with Mrs. Gaines as if nothing had happened. And it was the most southern, nothing pretentious about it. It was Dr. Gaines. That was so typical of him. And he then proceeded out. Well, you can tell it made an impression on me. Nobody before or since have I seen. Nor could anybody else have done it.
How charming.
Oh, it was the most charming moment.
Oh.
It was just really, well, as I say, it made a lifetime impression on me. It was very gracious. Not a word was said.
Well, I'll have to speak to John Elrod about hand kissing, that he needs to work on his hand kissing.
All eyes were upon this lovely young girl who was to marry his son.
Oh, that is so charming.
He was a very charming man, and as his health declined in later years, it was very tragic. But he could literally charm the birds out of the trees. Literally. And I know many have, you've been told that. There's lots of documentation about what a remarkable man he was. There are no orators, I guess. They're political speakers, but they can't hold a candle to that kind of southern
tradition. I've heard tapes of him.
Yeah.
And it's a remarkable voice.
Clever. Wonderful wit. Well, just an unusual man. W. Nelson has really been gifted in those who have served. Each has brought
so.
Their own strength. Have you talked to anybody much about Fred Cole?
I would love to hear more about Fred Cole.
He was the shyest man. He was so shy, very inarticulate. So difficult for him to speak publicly. I remember once we went with to the board meeting. I guess it was the one that had to do with integration. It was at the homestead, and I remember Jim saying, "Poor Fred Cole." He said his hands. He was a chain smoker, and his hands would just be soaking wet. He had to struggle with an extremely conservative Governor Holt in West Virginia, known as Rocky Holt, and others who, you know, as I said. Previously, that whole problem. And it was accomplished, but he lost his job, in effect. They got rid of him. But we on the faculty, the staff, are indebted to him forever, because until Fred Cole came along, people just assumed that you could live on your salary. Jim's salary, obviously the dollar, there's a big difference. When the year we went was $1,200 a year. We lived in the prefab. They're now torn down. They're over there across from East Nelson Apartments. That was just the way it was. And Fred Cole changed all of that. And for the first time, there was serious benefits and serious increases. I mean, nothing huge, but we never were reimbursed. Jim was our early years there were such. I mean, if you were asked to entertain, you just entertained. We were never reimbursed. Never paid for a bottle of whiskey for anything, no matter how. I remember we would have 85 parents, and I'd make the food all night long the night before, and Jim would go down and we'd take all the, practically the mortgage money, and buy the booze. I would say, Jim, I just can't understand this. I'm not asking anybody for anything, and he never did.
Oh,
now that's changed. Oh.
Things have changed.
I can remember, I'll tell you something that was significant at W&L, and the Baker Scholars, we got a grant from the George F. Baker Trust, and a man named Sherry Logan, they were interesting years. Sherry Logan managed the trust in New York, and Jim implemented the Baker Scholars program, and they're alumni right now. I wanted to do some research on this while I was researching for the campaign and never had the time to do it. The grants, that came to us for financial aid. And it was a competitive scholarship. There were certain institutions picked, and we were among the few who were picked for this. Really, it was quite an honor to be on the receiving end. The reason it popped in my mind was because Sherry Logan was coming down to meet with these prospects. And we were going to entertain him and have a party for him. He was a great fan. I believe it must have been the year Toynbee was here, because he was a great fan. And we had invited him specifically so that we could have the Toynbees, and he was thrilled out of his mind. And Jim said, "Well, what are we going to do the rest of the weekend?" And I said, "Well, we could take him over to the Greenbrier, over to the homestead, and have lunch." He said, "Yeah, that'd be a good idea." Well, I want to tell you that I think we did without a Thanksgiving turkey or something that year. You know, it was just tough. If it was a sacrifice, you just found the money to do it. I mean, the young faculty over the years who have come and complained and complained and complained, I could never bear to hear it, because they had this wonderful help toward educating their children with the tuition grant, and they could always turn in to their department head, or however it's done now, a chit for what they had spent. And there was none of that. But Fred Cole did, to come back to this original, he did make a huge difference in the quality of life for faculty and staff. And I don't think he's probably remembered enough, recognized enough for what he did. He survived, he didn't survive in his terms of his presidency, the integration, but he had the guts to see it through.
What do you mean he didn't survive his presidency?
He left. See, I think his I can't tell you, I don't know exactly, I'm not privy to that, but I know I've heard Jim say they got the board just pushed him out. But the good Lord, what made me think about all this was when I said Washington Lee has always had the right man at the right time. He really has looked out for. W&L has been blessed over and over again in its leadership. It had Dr. Gaines at that time after the Depression and the years when you needed that. And then it had Fred Cole, who was not an easy man to know. He was not Mr. Congeniality. The alumni never knew him, but he had to bite some tough bullets, and he did. He didn't back off from it, and it happened. The integrated the black situation. And then right at the time when we needed someone who was articulate, and Bob Huntley's legal background, and during the crisis that we talked about in the beginning, the Cambodian thing, when a lot of colleges were just going bananas, and he was so strong in that crisis, and he was during the campaign, the campaign of 78. As I told you earlier, he really was the key to the success of that campaign. It was Bob Huntley's campaign. And the faculty was grateful to Bob. Bob had been a member of the faculty, and he continued the benefits like TIAA and all that kind of thing. I'm not sure he instigated that. But anyway, he saw to it that there were improvements. And had it not been for him, Sidney and Francis wouldn't have given the law school. So there's always been, it seems, the right man, the right time. Then John Wilson came along with his marvelous gifts. His command of the English language is just mind-boggling. And the physical changes that he brought about were so needed. We couldn't. How could you be? I'll never forget the morning. It was almost like he woke up one morning. He woke up two mornings and had a revelation. One was the need for the fine arts. You cannot expect to draw the best students if you don't have the performing arts. And then one morning, literally, he woke up and thought, the science program. We've got to do something. We've got to do it right now. And the urgency sent us in the fundraising. I was writing the proposal for it. What the proposal as demanding as it was to put together, was really negligible because it was John who went out and could tell the major prospects why we simply had to have it. Certainly I couldn't have written anything that would move people like John could. So, and now we have John Elrod, whose interests are very different, and his concern for financial aid for students, you know, I didn't know that's close to his heart, and for integrating various cultures, and it's a huge challenge that any educator, I think, is faced with right now. All of these, for me to think, imagine in my college days that Spanish would be a second language, and all the Asian students, you know, it's just a very challenging time, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes. He and John, you know, met, and they were so close as administrators, and he did have that wonderful opportunity, because so much of what's happening now has grown out of what's happened in the last, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the good Lord has looked after us.
Well, that's a very nice summary. I think I could talk to you all afternoon, probably tonight and tomorrow, wrap this up.
We're going to have a sandwich.
And thank you so much.
Well, I'm still overwhelmed. Because it's just wonderful to be able to just say what it meant.
Well, it's wonderful to capture it, and I'm honored to be the one to do it.